from the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
We just didn't do enough offensively. You know, we did a good job off the opener and had rallies first and second inning. And then their guys shut us down. I mean, it was very quiet. It was 2 or 3 hits the rest of the game, 1 walk maybe. So there's just wasn't any traffic, wasn't any really at bats to innings to put pressure on them, and it was just a light offensive day.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 6-7 of the Score. That is Craig Counsell, and he's right. There wasn't much going on for the Cubs, and they were in the game right up to the point where they weren't, and they lost a very close game. But did you feel like they were? I mean, I got to tell you, there were a couple of innings there where you're watching them go down in order, and you're thinking to yourself, like, well, who's going to be the guy? Who's going to be the guy that, like, who's going to run into one?
Nobody.
Or who's going to? No.
Nobody.
No.
2 strikeouts in the 9th inning. They can't catch up to velocity. This is a team that just can't get going. With the hitters, they don't have anyone that is having the kind of year that you point to and you say that's a career year. Cody Bellinger's still out. They can't win one-run games. When you talk about one-run games, yesterday was their 37th one-run game. They've only won 15 of those.
Yeah.
15-22 in one-run games.
Yeah.
So 13-23 against the division. That's not where you thought the Cubs would be on July 25th. So you approach this trade deadline as the beginning of your off-season plan for 2025. Jed said as much on Monday. Hold him to that. So you have to start to think, okay, if this were November 15th, what would you do? Well, I would talk to Seiya Suzuki and Ian Happ and wonder, are they willing to waive their no-trade clause? One of them. Not both of them. One of them. I think you need to change there. I would probably try to do right by Kyle Hendricks to see if there's anything that anyone would want from him because he's not part of the plans next year. I would see if there's a taker on Hector Neris. Please. Please. Because you don't want him to.
How far would you go to do that? I mean, how much does it mean to you to pay for him? Would you say, hey, if he appears more than 60 times, we'll pay half of next year's salary?
No, I doubt that I'd do that. I don't think that I would go that far necessarily. Okay. It depends on what you're getting in return, though.
Well, you get something.
If you're getting a decent prospect, I might do that. Yeah, I might do that. You're talking about $4.5 million probably. That's a good equation. That's a good conversation. It's worth negotiating. I don't know that I would get rid of Mark Leiter Jr. I definitely wouldn't get rid of Jameson Taillon, and I would laugh in the face of anybody who asks about Justin Steele. I would say, yeah, right.
Well,
forget it.
I think the thing about Steele is they'd have to ask. You're not shopping him. And that would mean they'd have to know that it's going to be like a really big kind of deal that you're asking for.
Yeah, but I don't think that it's – at all realistic.
I would keep him on my team and I would have him be my opening day starter next year. I'm just saying the thing you have to remember, like, let's just for the sake of argument say that the Dodgers call and they're like, hey, you know, we're looking at Crochet, but who knows if he's going to be healthy. What do you want for Justin Steele?
Yeah.
Okay. And then they make whatever the offer is that they were given. Would you say, ooh, well, hold on a second, let me just have a little meeting here? Or would you say, no, we don't want to see Justin next year when we're trying to win a World Series?
The latter.
Yeah.
I'm that guy. I'm like,
yeah.
Don't talk to me about trying to move the goalposts again. You should have won this year, and you better win next year.
Yeah.
That's the mentality I have if I'm Tom Ricketts. And that's a mentality I have to take if I'm Jed Hoyer. Because if you're lucky enough to still have your job in the offseason, Jed Hoyer has got to win next year.
Let's go back to that. You just answered it maybe. But when you say, if I'm Tom Ricketts, you're talking about Jed's future?
Yes.
And then you're saying that Jed has to win next year, or that's when you make a move?
Yes.
Okay.
That's the urgency.
So Jed is safe for right now and this season, regardless of what happens, but then he's on
I fully respect the idea, and anyone who wants to argue that Jed Hoyer should be facing job jeopardy or the hot seat right now.
What is his contract status?
I think he's got one more year, I believe so.
A year after this?
Yes.
Okay.
I think next year might be his final season. Okay. He might have addressed that indirectly. And I think people understandably could say he should go after this year if they don't make the playoffs. I get all that. I don't believe that because I don't think that Tom Ricketts believes that.
That means you may as well move now because they're not going to make the playoffs.
They're not,
right?
Yeah. But I wouldn't do that. I think.
No, I wouldn't either.
I would wait and give him a chance to build one more playoff team to see where this goes. I wouldn't fire him at the end of this year. So the Cubs have to, though, respond to what didn't happen this year. They were at least a bat short. And these prospects that give us 8 of the top 100 prospects and all the high rankings for minor league systems, it's all well and good, but when are one of those guys going to hit? When are they going to pay off? I don't mean physically hit.
Arrive.
I mean pay off.
Okay.
Pay off. Arrive,
but
succeed.
It'd be great if they could hit, too.
Yeah. If PCA could hit, we wouldn't be having this conversation.
That's what's really bad.
Yeah.
Right now.
Enough comparisons to Albert Almora. Enough.
Oh, boy.
You kind of derisive nicknames, PC Triple A. You need to see the kid get the at-bats necessary now to see what you have in him. And I think the final 55 games or so after the deadline, that's got to be part of the thought process. So as much as you might love Mike Tauchman, for instance, Cody Bellinger coming back, you're going to have to play some youth to find out exactly what you have if you have indeed surrendered this season, as Jed Hoyer conceded on Monday.
Would you like to call him Pete Crow Anderson, just as a kind of reminder that he hasn't hit yet and you don't know who he is?
That was Chelly innocently doing that.
I'm sorry.
That was just a little faux pas. But you know what? It made me think, if Pete Crow Armstrong had established himself a little more,
yeah, you'd know
guys
his name.
Like Chelly wouldn't be messing up his name. The casual fan still is not used to Pete Crow Armstrong succeeding because he's not on base enough. He's not doing enough things. The other thing about Pete Crow Armstrong, though, I think is why it's worth giving him another chance. This team needs some personality. This team needs some life. The Cubs are just boring.
Well,
aren't they boring?
I think Dustin said it. You know, the Palatine Pounder has an opportunity to make a play that Pete Crow Armstrong would have made, and he doesn't make it. But it's a hard play to make. I'm not criticizing him for not making it.
Yeah.
But that's just it. That is it. It is a reminder of, you know, sometimes whatever you want to do, whatever change you make, it ends up not being good for you.
Well, but it's all related because they're not good enough offensively to include, or for his lack of offensive productivity to be ignored. Because if they were a better offensive team,
yeah,
you could absorb his low batting average and the offensive liabilities for his defense and his base stealing ability. Those would be things that you could, you know, justify keeping him in the lineup. As it is, you can't. I just wish. I'm going to go back to that. Pete Crow Armstrong plays with a flamboyance that is fun. This Cub team.
Not if he can't hit.
Well, yeah, right. But if he can't hit, Mully, and he's still in the lineup, he's hitting .210 and he's making every catch and he's stealing bases when he does get on first. I think that it's fun. They have a flair. This Cub team has no life. They're very stoic. I know it's a little thing, but they're very dull. When the most exciting thing about this 3-game series against the Brewers is John Lester's in the booth, it tells you everything about how boring this team is.
Wow. Man, that's
no?
Well, there's just a lot of things you could say there if you wanted to, but I like John Lester and I wouldn't do it, but that was fairly dull as well. Psycho is in Westchester. Hey, Psycho.
Love the show. David, there's no way I would have Jed back. I'm sorry. He hasn't done anything. Last year during the trade deadline, he was a relief pitcher short for the playoff runs, and they choked in the month of August. Last year, his big trade was Mile Mastrobone. He said he got a steal from a Tampa Bay. He's got a lot of power. Well, where is it? I don't see it. He gave a no-trade contract to Ian Happ. He was hot. When he was hot, they should have traded him because he's blocking spaces for Owen Casey and other outfielders in the minor leagues. Hmm. So, I mean, I'm sorry. And if he wants to get rid of Jameson Taillon, that's really a salary dump. A stupid move on his part if he wants to get rid of him. Some of those acquisitions that he got, like Neris this year, overpaid him. He's a bum. He should have gotten J.D. Martinez. He was out there. They needed another bat in the lineup. They didn't get it. He was reluctant. He said, oh, there you had the same team as last year. Guess what? Pittsburgh, Cincinnati, Milwaukee—they all passed.
Psycho.
All
he brought in Shota. I mean, you gotta appreciate that he didn't pay
huge.
Marcus Stroman and brought in Shota.
Huge
Imanaga.
Move. Good point.
And that, I mean, I'm just saying, if you're really, you know, gonna kind of balance everything that he did, I mean, that was good.
Well, if he gets rid of Taillon, what's good that? I mean, next year he'll be looking for a pitcher, another starting pitcher. And here's the thing. If this guy's going to be canned at the end of the year, why is he going to be making trades during his trade deadline when the new general manager comes in? They'll be looking for starting pitchers, and he's going to get rid of Jameson Taillon.
Well, that's the point. That's the point, Psycho. He's not going anywhere at the end of the year.
Psycho.
Thanks for the phone call. Good phone call. A lot of passion there.
Yeah, excellent.
Jed's not going anywhere. I don't think I shouldn't say – I'm more sure about Jed not going anywhere than I would be about Jameson Taillon. I hope Jameson Taillon isn't going anywhere either. You keep him.
Yeah, I mean, listen, you have a strength to this team, and I don't understand that. And as I said, this is why people get, you know, throw their hands up. Because, you know, the guys you need to trade, you can't trade because they're no damn good. But the guys that are good, you shouldn't trade them just because you can.
Yeah, exactly. Don't you think that the biggest problem, we can talk about the bullpen and it's, you know, the blown saves and all the things, but the biggest area that was neglected is obvious. They did not get the bat.
No,
Psycho mentioned J.D. Martinez. That's a good name. There are other names out there that were not
pursued. Who was the third baseman that they were supposed to sign?
Chapman?
There you go.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm just saying, there's like 100,000 different ideas that were floating around. You did feel like they came up a bat short.
They were.
And
they did.
And unfortunately,
you're seeing the results of that now. I wonder this too. It'd be good to talk to Carter Hawkins, and I hope he can answer this question. It's a hard one to address because you're in the midst of the season. What do they have in Christopher Morel? Is he a guy that you need to maintain confidence in?
Listen,
you need to maintain giving him at bats because
guy,
he can hit home runs.
He's a guy who has upside, but he's got to get better in a hurry. That's what my feelings are about Christopher Morel. He is a guy that could be pretty damn good, but it better happen starting soon.
Well, he's really been disappointing. He's got one home run, I think, in his last 16 games.
I know.
And there was no confidence when he came up late in the game yesterday that he was going to do anything.
Did you feel it?
I felt like he was going to strike out.
Yeah, I felt the same way.
I felt like now there's like
no
buzz. Now, he was the guy that did supply a lot of the fun and the fervor and the frenzy, all those things. Christopher Morel was the infectious, enthusiastic guy, right? Where's that gone? Well, when you're not hitting, it's hard to be that guy.
John is on the Odyssey app. Hey, John.
Hey, guys. Enjoying your show. Listen, Suzuki, let me ask you one question. If we was coming to the end of the season and we needed to win one game and we was winning and the last fly ball was hit to deep right, would you be trembling in your knees if Suzuki was in right?
Oh, I'd be shaking my boots, John. I'd be shaking my boots. Yes. That's a great call. Now, Say Suzuki's hard to pick on because he hit the big home run yesterday, and he has been pretty good at the plate. But I have no confidence, John. That's a very good phone call. Whatever happened to him as the defensive right fielder that was so good and so trusted? Do you trust him in the ninth inning to catch a fly ball?
I think PCA could run over in front of him and catch him at his hip.
Or at least collide.
Let's try Kevin. Kevin's in Palatine. Hey, Kevin.
Hey, good morning, guys. So last year we traded a left-handed starter for Jeimer Candelario. That starter is now dominating for the Washington Nationals, and we let Candelario go for no reason. So you gave up a great prospect. You had a guy who's a legit third baseman, or you could have got Matt Chapman, but you decided to do neither, and you're smarter, as always, than everyone else. And you wanted to turn this 190 free-swinging hitter into a third baseman. So, I mean, Jed has done a horrific job, but those were two third basemen. One, you already gave up the prospect for Candelario. So the fact you didn't re-sign him is insane. And you let him go to a competitor in the division. Here's the other thing. And I'm sorry, PCA, I don't care about his defense. His existence bothers me. I don't want to hear about his defense. Mully, you're so right. This is about offense. He sucks, and I want to know today. I want to know when Carter comes on. Why are they hiding all these prospects? Why are they prospect humping? Bring someone up. Show us something. Quit hiding them. Or are they hiding them because they're all as bad as Armstrong? That's what should make a Cubs fan shudder. Thanks, guys.
The answer to that question, I think, is that they don't feel any of those prospects are better than, say, a Suzuki or Ian Happ. And those are both professional ball players that say what you want about them. Maybe you could argue that they should be doing better, but are doing well enough that they're not looking to replace them with a minor leaguer who's going to learn on the job.
You know, that's the problem, though. You're settling for well enough. You're settling for well enough.
I'm not arguing that.
And when you settle for well enough, then you're going to be where the Cubs are, on the outside looking in.
But you have to... Part of growing with prospects is taking the lumps with them while they're getting better.
Yeah.
And I don't know that you're able to do that right now at two different spots in the outfield.
Well, you better be able to do that.
And actually be three because PCA is having to play.
You better be able to do that now, or you're in a better position to do that now because of your futility, because you have played your way out of contention. You have played yourself into the spot where the next 55 games after the trade deadline are all about development.
Are they a tryout?
I think so. And that's what I'm talking about with the problem when you guarantee no trade clauses to Suzuki and Happ. Makes them harder to move. But one of them's got to go, I think, before next year. One of them's got to go so you can find either a better replacement, a different mix offensively, or it's time for Owen Casey or Kevin Alcantara or Alex Canario or somebody who you've been waiting on to arrive.
All right, we're going to take a break here. We're going to take a minute. We're going to collect ourselves, and we're going to come back and talk about the general manager whose job's not in question. We'll talk about some of the young players that are arriving, and we'll talk about the Chicago Bears. We'll bring in Dan Wiederer, and we'll have some happy talk because they haven't played a game yet, and maybe we'll ask him. It's a week early, but... How much are you going to play the quarterback?
Good question. They don't have a good answer.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 6-7 The Score.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spunks puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Four.
Hike! Hike!
Dan Wiederer.
You've got a guy with credentials, you got a guy with some qualifications, and now there's just when done at its best, provides a level of steadiness and stability that helps create and stimulate success.
On-air contributor for 670 The Score.
Listen, we're not going to accept the status quo. We are going to push for more. We are going to strive for more.
Co-host of the Take the North podcast with our own David Haw.
We're going to take the North and never give it back.
Dan Wiederer with Mully and Haw on 670 The Score.
Bear down. Let's go.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 670, The Score. Always fun to talk to Dan Wiederer, and he joins us now on The Score Hotline. Dan, good morning. How are you?
I'm doing good. How are you guys?
Good.
You know, we had an interesting discussion earlier in the show about, I know we got plenty of time here, but, you know, sooner than you realize, a week from now, we'll be in Canton at the Hall of Fame game, and the Bears will be playing Houston. And, you know, I don't know that, you know, Danielle Hunter wants to play much in that game or if they're going to use Will Smith Jr., but just the idea that they have guys like that and the Bears, I'm not sure if Braxton Jones will be practicing by then. I don't know. I mean, I don't know if you want to be getting your rookie starter up and running at that point, and I wonder if you do.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how Matt kind of navigates this. And the one caveat that he said all throughout with his target range of reps for Caleb in the preseason is you have to take a look at the health of your offensive line. The Bears will get into pads tomorrow. They'll have padded practices on Friday and Saturday. You'll continue kind of the ramp up toward the Hall of Fame game, and you have to kind of hope that you come through in good shape health-wise and pretty injury-free, so that if you do want to get Caleb and that starting offense a little bit of work early, that they're behind an offensive line that's intact and reliable. And so that's kind of going to be a fluid situation in the next week. And obviously with four preseason games, they've got an extra game to distribute the reps, and we'll just kind of wait and see how it all shakes out.
So Dan, the other day you said that Caleb Williams still has a long way to go to become a top tier NFL quarterback, but man, oh man, some of the QB feel stuff he shows. Yep. It's in there. Special is in there. So my sense is that after four practices, he looks the part.
At times, you know, it's still bumpy in patches, as it would be to be expected for a rookie quarterback trying to learn a new system and get timing and rhythm down with new pass catchers. But there are things that in the quarterback feel element, David, that you and I have talked about in terms of getting the ball out quickly, understanding how to progress in a rapid and decisive fashion. And then obviously the throw that we talked about on the Take the North podcast, and then the Bears highlighted on social media, was a play the other day in practice where he just showed great pocket feel, sensed pressure, felt it, climbed the pocket quickly and decisively, and ripped the ball over the middle, 20 plus yards to DJ Moore, who makes a great catch. And you say, well, there's the express lane to passing for over 200 yards in a football game, which hasn't always been something that's been possible for the Bears in the last few years. And so as you're watching day by day and you're seeing a kid who clearly has good instincts and clearly understands how to throw the football to different parts of the field with different touches, you say, yeah, there's absolutely the potential for everything that the Bears dream of here. And now it's just about adhering to this developmental plan in a way that brings him along as quickly as possible, but also doesn't rush him as the urgency and the expectations in the outside world kind of ramp up.
Where are they at with their offensive line and the players that you hope to line up there?
So, right, like that's what we're talking about here, Molly, where you did bring up Braxton Jones and how quickly he's going to be able to go. And then so you've got Larry Borum taking a lot of first team reps at left tackle. You still have what Shane Waldron has called a healthy competition at center with Ryan Bates and Coleman Shelton alternating days with the ones at the center position. Nate Davis has been practicing during the early stretches of camp. But again, the first padded practice is Friday, and then there's another padded practice on Saturday. And so you really want to see several consecutive weeks of grueling practices in the books with Nate Davis still on the field to feel like you can count on him every single day at right guard. And so that is one position that I think as a group, you want to see get some stability before we get into mid to late August, so that you feel like everything is kind of stair-stepping upwards instead of taking a pause and waiting to see who's going to be available for you. And so that is certainly worth keeping an eye on here in the weeks ahead.
Eric Washington, the defensive coordinator, at least in title, spoke yesterday. What was the most impactful thing you think he said?
2 days ago. We were off yesterday, which was a welcome.
Yeah. I'm glad you got a day off.
You've been going through hell. That's 4 days, for God's sake.
Yeah, so, I mean, four consecutive days, Molly. That was four consecutive days.
Life has changed on the football beat. That's all I think.
Even since I started, it has changed dramatically with the way that they layer these days off in. But look, like one of the things that caught my ear with Eric Washington was, number one, he's talking about having a pass rush that can win with four and doesn't have to send a lot of exotic pressures and then can turn the secondary, which they feel can be one of the best in the league, loose to make a lot of plays on the back end. And with that, he sort of made an insinuation that they are experimenting with Montez Sweat. And what that means is, where do you line him up? How do you take advantage of the gifts he has and the flexibility he has to, you know, move him around? Is he going to be on the right side of this play? Is he going to be on the left side of this play? Is he going to be able to play the, you know, your sort of standard five technique defensive end position? Do you want to move him out wide on occasions and make offensive tackles, make some decisions and figure out how to, you know, block the whole thing with Montez Sweat being the focal point of things? And so I think they see Montez Sweat as a really valuable chess piece, and they have really tapped into his willingness to adapt and his willingness to learn, to try to figure out some things here throughout the offseason and now into training camp about how he can be utilized in a way that turns the whole defense loose in a different manner that allows them to be as productive as they were down the stretch to last season.
I'm all for that. I got no problem with that. I do wonder about whom else will be getting pressures on the quarterback. And I know they like their group, and they are content with their group, and perhaps there are internal solutions to problems. But I also know this, that if you don't look externally, then those answers dry up quickly. And I'm not saying that they, you know, should gulp or anything, because and Yannick Ngakoue went down to Miami to work out, and they signed someone else. I'm just saying they did sign someone, and these things – you know, you don't know what you need till you need it. And sometimes having too many is just enough.
So that's where I think this next stretch of practices is really, really telling, because for the first time since last January, the Bears are going to have linemen being able to do lineman things in practice. When you get to the padded practices on Friday and Saturday, you can turn guys loose. You can see, okay, are the flashes we saw from Austin Booker during the spring and summer real? Do they apply when he's taking on one-on-one battles against full-fledged physical offensive linemen in the NFL? Do you have enough faith in Jacob Martin to believe that he can be a starter slash rotational guy for you off the edge? We've seen DeMarcus Walker bumping inside a lot on obvious passing situations where then you feel like you've got a guy that can rush from the interior alongside Jerron Dexter, alongside Sweat, and then that other end position has to just be a complementary part. And so there's a lot to study here, and there's a lot I think that Ryan Poles and Eric Washington and Matt Eberflus are looking to see when they finally can get into the pads on Friday and Saturday. And you guys know as well as anyone, that's a big day during training camp for the football-y people, because you do finally get a chance to see things that you've just been guessing about during, you know, OTAs and mini camp and the early parts of training camp.
And so far you're evaluating and basically being guided by a lot of things you hear more than what you see. And I thought you made an interesting point on the podcast the other day, Dan, about how this Bears season, this Bears team does have a collection of veterans who are actually leaders, guys who have high characters, guys who have high football IQs, guys like Tremaine Edmonds and TJ Edwards and Montez Sweat, and then you go to the secondary, Kevin Byard. The list is longer than it has been in a while of guys you actually think you can talk to and want to hear from.
Yeah, you kind of go back to the end of the Lovey era, where you just felt like there were faces and voices all over that locker room that were valuable and had insight to share and experience to impart on younger players. And you think of that whole core of that group back then, and now you see things starting to come together defensively. You know, you've got talkers and leaders on the back end of that defense. You got Tremaine Edmonds, you got Montez Sweat. You talk about on the offensive side of the ball, Cole Kmet and Mercedes Lewis back for season 36 or whatever it is for him now. And there's just there are guys on this team, and there are guys who understand how difficult it is to win at a meaningful level in this league and understand just what it takes to sort of bring out the best in an individual and then by extension a team. And so you hope that sort of creates a momentum here in July and August that the Bears can utilize, because listen, you guys know as well as I do, City of Chicago is not waiting around for the Bears in the month of September. They're expecting to see direction immediately in those first few games of the season. And so you have to be able to arrive there ready for that moment. And we know, we've seen it in years past where there's been an anticipation building, an expectation building, and we get into that season opener, and it's a total fizzle. And all of a sudden the entire air comes out of an entire city, and it's hard to come back from. And so the hope is you're not there, and the hope is that some of these leaders and these guys that can provide that energy and juice do just that.
It's fascinating, Dan, because, you know, obviously we're not up there, but you're reading everything and you're watching everything, and I see all the lovely stories written about Javon Dexter, and he's got the sprinter's body, the marathon body, and that's all great, and he looks different.
Eating the honey buns, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I want to be called honey buns, but at any rate, Tyreek Stevenson is making plays, and he made plays last year, and you know what you got with him, and Tyler Scott, every time I turn around, it seems like he's developing a pretty good rapport with the quarterback. They, you know, that you forget because they got such a deep, talented trio that he's even a guy that's still there. And, you know, he had some drops last year, but no, he's gonna catch some balls. So that's wonderful to see. I just wonder, I haven't heard a lot about, like, Zach Pickens. Where is he at? Is he on the way to him? And is the whole draft class, you know, led by Darnell Wright? Are all these guys going to play? Roschon Johnson is another guy. Now, they haven't, you know, we haven't been privy to seeing any contact, so he's more a guy that will show up when they run the ball. But, you know, I wonder about Noah Sewell. What's his situation? I thought they got a lot out of Terrell Smith last year. I'm just saying, is that whole draft class ready to take another step? Because we're talking about a lot of different names from some of these guys.
That is a lot of different names that you just threw out there, and I think you understand why. But like, you understand why Ryan Poles is getting more sleep and better sleep these days, because you look at a roster that feels fortified. You look at a roster that seems to have quality depth behind the frontline starters, and you feel like you can now take that step to being competitive against anyone you play. And so I think they feel really good about the talent they've assembled. Now, as you guys know, it's all about how do you develop them and how do you find the right roles so that guys can be at their best and contributing to a football team that can be a winning football team. And there's a lot of young players in this roster that have promise. I think we're going to hear from Tyreek Stevenson today, and I'm here to talk to him because he really did have an encouraging rookie season, weathered some of those downs that you expect from a young corner, and found ways to be productive with the football and taking it away. And that's going to be a huge weapon to have when you also have, by the way, Jalen Johnson, oh, by the way, Kyler Gordon, oh, on the back end, Kevin Byard and Jaquan Brisker. And now you feel like you've got a secondary that's ready to roll. And so, like, you go position by position and you say, yeah, there's competition here. Yeah, there's depth here. And now we just need to see some of these guys emerge into leading roles and key backup roles where you feel like, okay, every single week we take the field, we can win this football game. And we're not just hoping that everything breaks our way. We have a legitimate chance, and we have the pieces in place that our coaches can utilize accordingly to get that done. And so I that's where the optimism is building. And then obviously you guys know it's a long grind through August. Health is the great mitigator of progress in this league, and injuries can bite you at any time, but certainly they feel really good about the roster construction and where it's gone from day one, Orion, to now, you know, starting year three.
Dan, who affects Sundays more, Darnell Wright or Javon Dexter?
Good question. I think your hope is that it's Dexter. Look, I think they know what they have in Darnell Wright, and they feel like they've got a guy who can start at the tackle position for a decade and be just an absolute lockdown wall for you at the tackle position. He's currently at right. I know there's been some thoughts internally that eventually he could make a move to left if necessary. Dexter is the guy that just feels like the guy you've bet on. And Molly just documented it a few minutes ago about all the things that we've heard about Javon Dexter, and he looks better and he's sleeker and he's got to do all this. Well, let's get into pads on Friday and Saturday and let's see it. Let's watch in these preseason game reps. Let's watch when they have the crossover practice with the Cincinnati Bengals and judge with our own eyes whether this progress is real or whether it's just kind of that leap of faith of excited optimism that this city often takes. And so great. Javon Dexter looks like he's ready, but it's a see it to believe it proposition. And I think the Bears really need him to be an every week difference maker for this defense to be what they've said they want to be, which is a top five defense in this league. To be that, Javon Dexter has got to be that guy.
Yeah. I what I'm trying to say is that a couple of these draft classes there are a few draft classes in.
They're strong.
The first couple look pretty good. I mean, they look like that's how you get better in the NFL. You bring in young players and they get better as you go. And that's what I'm really looking forward to with the Bears.
No, I agree with you. And then this current draft class obviously has got some meaningful guys, not just Caleb and Rome, but you know, Austin Booker is going to be a guy that you're really watching during his rookie season to see if they found a true diamond in the rough and whether he can contribute right away. And so, look, I think they've done a lot of good work on this roster, and they also understand that there's more to go. Look, on the Caleb front, that is the linchpin of everything. You know, he has to be a top tier quarterback. He can't be the 14th best quarterback in the league in 3 years. And you're still dreaming of contending for Super Bowls every year. And so that's the next step, is this very thought out layered developmental plan that they have for Caleb Williams. It has to be put into effect that creates progress early, because again, like, he's not going to be given that runway of forgiveness that Mitch was given, that Justin was given. It's going to be show us right now, and show us at a high level. Otherwise, we're all going to be screaming to high heavens that they got it wrong again.
Great stuff. Thanks so much, Dan. Really appreciate it.
Thanks, Dan.
All right, fellas. We'll see you later.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to this season. I'm looking forward to these young guys taking another step. And I'm really, I mean, I keep saying this, David. I really hope that Kyler Gordon can stay healthy, because I think he's got some special to him just with his kind of body control, etc. I think he could go get the ball.
It's a good group. Yep.
Yeah. All right. 312-644-6767. It's Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 6-7 The Score.
Two different players, but I mean, yeah, they have some similarities where they extend plays and make things happen. I think that's a good trait to have. So yeah, it's just, you know, you got to hold your block for a longer time. Make sure you know when the plays get extended out the pocket, you're making sure, you know, you don't hold, or he gets out of your framework, you gotta, you know, let him go or whatever you gotta do. But yeah, I think he'll make a lot of plays doing that.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 6-7 of the Score. That is the voice of Darnell Wright, and he was asked about the difference between the quarterbacks he's played with the Bears, mainly Justin Fields and Caleb Williams. And interesting to get his reaction to that. I was, I'm always kind of interested in ideas or future, you know, et cetera. Dan saying maybe they move him to left tackle at some point.
Well, you wonder about that because of the investment in what we consider and call often premium positions.
Yes.
Right tackle typically is just under or lesser than left tackle. We just saw in Minnesota the Vikings locked up Christian Darrisaw, right? So that's something that teams do typically for premium positions. But likewise, the Lions lock up Sewell. He's the other side.
Penei Sewell is one of the maybe the best right tackle in the league, and really
fair assessment.
Probably difficult for Darnell Wright to make a Pro Bowl when he's playing behind him in the division.
Fair assessment. But I think so. The point is, in bringing up both those examples in your own division, is that teams identify foundational pieces on their offensive line and they invest heavily in that guy. That for the Bears is Darnell Wright. I don't know if he has to move to the left side for that to be true or to stay true. I think he can still be a guy that you look at, you know, when you're building for the future in terms of your planning for your investments, because the Bears have now Darnell Wright at a tackle spot. They've got their quarterback. They've got their wide receiver. They've got their edge rusher. Those are the four factors. If you start to say, what does every Super Bowl winner need? Those are the four elements. So Darnell Wright is in for a big payday at one point if he can get consistent and keep improving. And I don't know, Molly, you're right. The left tackle thing is enticing. It's a good conversation. But if he's great at his job on the right side, would you want to toy around with that, with footwork, with, you know, we always say keep a strength of strength.
Yes.
He's a pretty strong right tackle.
And again, I mean, Braxton Jones, they have made a major investment in him. It's called playing time. Mm-hmm. That is a way for a team to invest in a player as well. And they've had him as their starting left tackle since his rookie year, albeit he's a fifth round pick. But, and that, you know, if he is the answer, and we don't know that, and we don't know, it's worrisome, frankly, that his neck injury is still there, that he hasn't move beyond, and we don't know how he's going to do.
It is.
But they did address that position in the draft with Kieran Amagaji. That is a guy that they obviously look at as a future left tackle type of prospect.
Okay.
A big, strong guy. A third-round pick taken two rounds before Braxton Jones, but pre-injured. So there's a reason that he might have gone earlier had he not had the leg injury, which is preventing him from being
fine.
Able to play now.
I my initial reaction to all of this, which is totally unfair but honest, right now when you have a starting left tackle with the neck issue that lingers, you drafted his potential long-term replacement because he's not ready yet because of surgery.
Yeah.
You drafted somebody pre-injured to potentially replace somebody who is already damaged.
And now you're debating, or at least you're rumored to be interested in signing a guy that might be hurt as much as anyone.
Because you haven't answered the question adequately.
Right.
In the offseason, whether with your starter who you invested all the time in or the potential future who invested a draft pick in. So if those guys aren't ready yet.
Larry Borum is not a left tackle. Can we agree on that?
Well, I think he's the definition of serviceable. I guess he's a definition of swing tackle. You're not going to get where you want to go if he is your left tackle, though. I would agree with that.
Okay.
Yes.
And would that stop you from playing the quarterback if indeed you can't get the other two up and running by you?
Not if I'm handing off four times.
Okay.
If I'm handing off four times, I really am less concerned about pass protection if I'm designing it just to get the operation underway.
So you would bring him out there and just have him hand off so you get used to this is the NFL.
Dress rehearsal, muscle memory.
Okay.
And one of the biggest things that rookies have to learn also, I believe, is how to manage not only the clock, not only the huddle, but your anxiety. Mm-hmm. And that is, to me, important when you have an opportunity to do that, an extra chance to do that this year. You don't squander that. I'm not going to make a big deal if they don't, but that would be my reason for suggesting that they do.
And all I'm saying is that I will have a hard time handling my anxiety if somehow he decides he's going to throw a pass.
Oh, my hamstring. Hey, Molly, when we come back, we're going to switch to baseball. There's a big story in Major League Baseball that doesn't directly affect the Sox or the Cubs, but it affects every single team in the majors.
All right. Aren't the Cubs and the Sox in the majors?
Well, I mean specifically. This isn't like a trade rumor. This isn't like specific thing. This is a league-wide thing that happened that we need to discuss.
All right, we'll do that next. It's Mully and Haw at Chicago Sports Radio, 6-7 of the score.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.